Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and welcome to Scarycast Tuesday, part of the Scarycast Network, and what I believe to be the greatest paranormal network we've got going. This is Dr. John Stamey, live again from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, the sun and fun capital of the world. Today it was the sun and cold capital of the world, but we still love it. We wouldn't be anywhere else. I wanted to say we've got a great show tonight. We had a great show last night. We've got a lot of cool things coming up with the Scarycasters. So anyway, tonight, I want to first of all introduce, from Houston, Texas, Kyler Smith. How you doing, Kyler?
I'm doing awesome, man. I can't wait to see what we got to talk about tonight.
Absolutely. It's going to be wonderful. And our other co-host, who is my right and left-hand guy sometimes, is the one and only Matt Delf from somewhere in Southern Virginia, Ewing, Virginia. I know, you know. So he's from there, and we're glad to have him here. Matt, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here as well. Excited
about
the
show. Glad
you're
here. Appreciate so much the value you bring in being a boots-on-the-ground guy. You're going everywhere from New Orleans and searching out vampires to the Appalachian Mountains, searching out Bigfoot, to all these places. And thanks for the great stories and the great people that you bring. You brought on our show the likes of Jessica Jones, the likes of Trey Hudson. In fact, you and Trey, if rumor serves correct, are going to be our guests on Scarycast Monday in February, the early part of February, and it's going to be a blast. I mean, we have great guests. We have great people, and we love the paranormal. So I want to say an extra thanks to you, Matt, for everything that you do for us. And now tonight, in fact, I'm going to turn the program over to you to introduce our guest, who is, you know, one of the best-known people in the paranormal world. He truly is, and he's a really nice guy, you know? It's like, you know, you meet some of the, you know, like Clyde Logan, one of the nice people. I met Bill Shatner when I was on his show, Unexplained, and one of the nicest people. And you find that the paranormal world and the Comic-Con world have the best people. So that's why I'm glad to be associated with. So, Matt, take it away and introduce tonight's guest, please.
All right. Our guest is Ryan Paul Trimley, and I consider him a good friend, very knowledgeable. He's the host of Monster X Radio, and he knows a lot about the cryptid, I guess you could say, community, the stories, the folklore. He's got tons of knowledge. I feel like I've clicked with him right from the get-go. A lot of respect for him and good friendship. And tonight he's going to, all the way from out in Arizona, he's going to let us in on some stories and his own encounter and how he got started. So, welcome to the show, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? How you guys doing tonight?
We're good. I'm excited to have you here as part of our paranormal world, and just glad you're here, and glad Kyler's here, and glad Matt's here, and we have wonderful guests, and you're one of them. And in fact,
hey, thank you.
At, in the end game tonight, we're going to talk about a very curious relationship that you and I actually have that we just barely explored, about 5 o'clock today. It was kind of fun. So we'll talk about that when we do our plugs. So anyway, Ryan, I'm going to ask you the first question. What got you in this crazy, cool world of paranormal, I call it paranormal research. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Well, I started out as a monster kid. You know, growing up, I watched all those Universal monster movies, The Wolfman, The Creature from the Black Lagoon, Dracula, you know, and the Hammer films became a part of it, too. So even as a young kid, I was just obsessed and fascinated with all things monsters. And one day, my dad, when I was about 7 years old, showed me the Patterson-Gimlin film. And I was hooked the minute I saw that. You know, there was no way anybody was going to prove that was fake. And to me, that showed there's monsters in this world, and somebody needs to find them. So from there, I just started going after Bigfoot and looking into everything that was Bigfoot and Sasquatch related. And naturally, as it always goes, you go down one rabbit hole, you fall into other ones. So I found the Jersey Devil, the Chupacabra, and all these various monsters that just really stoked my imagination. And, well, here I am.
Well, that's great. So you fell in love with the monsters, kind of like I did. There was a syndicated show on a lot of television stations called Shock Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if is that the show that you saw?
No. Actually, really, the one that really, really hooked me was a very obscure Japanese monster film by the name of Half Human. It was released by Toho during the 50s, but I was lucky enough to catch it running on air. I think it was like TBS that was running it on a Saturday. And it was about the Yeti. But to me, that was Bigfoot. You know, to a young Ryan, that was still Bigfoot. The Yeti, but whatever, it's the same thing. And that right there, just, it grabbed me. It hooked me in and pulled me right into that world.
Well, that's great. Yes, the Yeti is certainly one of our favorites here. Really is. And so, and you mentioned the great Toho films. We know one thing. If they didn't do anything else in their entire existence, they created one of the most classic monster films of all time, that being Godzilla.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, that is my boy right there.
And, you know, it's like there's some stories that just don't go away. One is John Campbell's Who Goes There. A lot of people don't know what that is, but that's called The Thing or The Thing from Another World. And it's gone three repeats. It's about time for it to be remade again, and we just love The Thing. And Godzilla has been remade a number of times, and every time it's always as wonderful as it was last time, just new technology and everything. But, you know, I think, and I would say, and I'd like for you to comment on this, I think it's the stories that really capture us. I mean, last night we talked about The Sixth Sense, and I'm sure that's a movie you know, correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
And the whole point is these stories, the stories on film and the stories when you go out in the woods and come back and report to me or some other writer that puts them down, you know, the stories are what really capture the imagination of people that aren't really wrapped up in this world. Do you agree with that?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, you know, if you're any kind of person that has an imagination, you hear stories like that, it drops you right into this world where monsters are indeed real, and you kind of feel like a monster hunter. You know, you feel like a modern-day Van Helsing almost. And you can't but resist but to love that.
Well, you guys know what my nickname is, right?
Well, I have a nickname for you, but I'm not going to say it on here.
It's the Badass Monster Hunter.
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. That's mine. Matt, I like that. That was just mine was just a silly dad joke, so forgive me, okay?
Right. Me, speaking of Godzilla, I was a huge Godzilla fan when I was little. Real quick story, real fast. I'd come down south for a vacation, and I had a little Godzilla figure, and I'd left him up in the woods, and I threw a fit. I was probably about 3 or 4, and it took my aunt and them forever to find that thing, and I would not leave until we found that thing, and it's getting dark, but that's how big of a Godzilla fan I've been since little.
Wow. So. True monster kid right there.
Yep.
Yeah, well, and I'm going to correct you. I'm going to do something funny. It's not Godzilla. It's Gojira. Gojira.
There you go. That's he's actually, yeah, you're 100% correct. Yep.
And I've got an interesting little tidbit that very few people know. Harry Medved and his brother wrote some really great books called The Hollywood Hall of Shame. But Harry Medved was president of the Screen Actors Guild. And in a phone interview, he told me the following. And now this is something that I believe Dr. Sally Ryan Feather at the Ryan Research Institute, who wrote that grand book, The Gift, she said, if somebody that you know that is solid tells you a story, you probably need to believe it. Well, Harry Medved told me the following. Okay, the movie Godzilla was made by Toho Films in Japan. And it turns out they filmed additional footage with Raymond Burr, who was a gigantic Hollywood star at that point. And the American version of Godzilla was released by Toho Films. And it turns out that it was the overwhelming, according to Harry Medved, it was the overwhelming nominee for Best Film of the Year.
Wow.
And the Screen Actors Guild pulled it because it was 10 years since the end of World War II. And they said, we just can't do it. So the first monster film, truly, that really ever won an Academy Award was Godzilla. Raymond Burr was the overwhelming choice for Best Actor. And that's something a lot of people don't know. Maybe it's a little bit of folklore, but it's a lot of fact because it came from Harry Medved. So I just that's something I wanted to share with everybody, and especially with Ryan, because, I mean, man, if you're a Godzilla fan, you know that you're looking at an Academy Award-winning film. They just couldn't bring themselves to do it, and maybe they couldn't. Maybe we couldn't do it today, but, you know. That's the long and the short of Godzilla. Academy Award.
A lot of politics there.
Yep. So now tell us what you do and tell us about some of your really great experiences. I think that's something that everybody would like to hear.
Okay, well, currently I am a Dogman, Wendigo, and Skinwalker researcher. I actively go out into the field and I look for evidence of habituation or even passing through of Dogman. And after my own Dogman encounter, that became like a personal mission to me to, you know, verify these things are real. But I'm also going to be writing books. So I'll be writing the lore from the indigenous people in regards to Wendigo and Skinwalker so people can hear the true stories, not the stuff you hear on those horror narration channels, but the actual stuff right from the lips of the native people.
Now, tell everybody, because I know what a Wendigo, I think all of our co-hosts know what the Wendigo is, but please explain that, because a lot of our listeners, in fact, we got a lot of listeners right now live, and that's very good. Tell us a little bit of what is the Wendigo?
The Wendigo is actually an Algonquin spirit, and it's also shared by the Cree and the Ojibwe tribes, but it's a spirit of cannibalism. It's a sort of demon, I guess they would call it in modern-day terms. But it's brought on when somebody from the tribes breaks cultural taboos. Now, the most popular one is cannibalism. But greed, avarice, all these things can invoke the spirit that is the Wendigo and change a man, a woman, or even a child into a cannibal spirit that craves human flesh nonstop. So you could parallel it kind of to the ghouls that you hear about that are stalking graveyards, but it's something much, much more sinister.
Pretty horrible from the stories that I have been told. And how old would you say the legend of the Wendigo is?
I'd say it's old enough where we don't have any documentation of its first encounter. It's something that started up with the creation of the religious beliefs of the Algonquins and the various tribes. So is it written down anywhere? I don't think so. I think it's about as old as man itself.
Yeah.
Do you think the demon?
I think it's
yes,
what we call the demon
say?
In modern day terms.
I was asking if it's more like what we, like he said, a modern day demon pretty much.
Mm-hmm. I think like modern day man would call it a demon, but I think to the people that believe in this, it's something much more. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that'll say Wendigo's not real. It's just a state of mind. It's a way to scare the people into behaving. But you have to realize when natives are terrified of something like this, you really have to take notice and go, whoa, there's something to this. If they're that afraid of it, it's not fake. It's not made up. It's not just a way to say, hey, behave. There's something to it. But I think, yeah, in modern day terms, it would be called a demon. Yeah.
Yeah, I've had reports of, I've heard different people talk about a Wendigo, actually seeing it. And if you could describe it with a... If you could describe some of the forms.
Okay, well, a lot of hybridization came into play with the Wendigo. Most people, when they think Wendigo, they envision the stag-headed giant. That's like, it looks like a deer that's bipedal. But the interesting thing is if you actually really look at the lore, never did they wear the stag head. They never had antlers. Where the horns come from is the branches and the debris that a human that turns Wendigo will collect as they're roaming through the forest. You know, but if you want to look at different definitions, okay, for Wendigo, spelt with an I rather than E, Wendigo, there is a form of Bigfoot, which I like to parallel with Genosqua, the stone giant of Iroquois legend.
Very interesting. I think it's nice that you discuss the different tribes and the different legends and how they fit in with each other. I mean, I think that's really good because a lot of people don't know that.
Mm-hmm. You absolutely have to. When you're studying the lore and traditions of the indigenous people, you have to make sure to include them very much so. You have to include all the tribes, their various beliefs of it, the way it's been altered, and you really got to explain it to the people so they know things have changed once we got a hold of it and European settlers got a hold of it and altered it for easier consumption.
Very true.
Mm-hmm.
So they say that they, you know, they've got a, where they're cursed or whatever, but they got this thirst for hunger and they, the cannibalism, that's where they, don't they just keep growing and they get bigger and bigger within time?
Yes,
the more they eat?
The more human flesh they consume, the larger they become. And they reach a point where there's nothing on their mind but this hunger, so they're ravenous. So you can't reason with them. You can't talk to them or bring them down from this. So more often than not, somebody in the tribe would have to face this Wendigo to get rid of it. And I couldn't even imagine being in that position, man. No, thank you.
Well,
so,
you know, I've got to tell you kind of like a little bit of a parallel story. And it has to do with, and I'm jumping over to the Skinwalkers because we love the lore, legend and lore of the Skinwalkers, don't we, Ryan?
Ooh, yes, we do, and that gets very, very dark and very scary.
Well, it does, and let me tell you my story. I have, a web development company. I've done web development for 25 years, and I have a lot of clients, and I have my own stuff. And I have lots of paranormal domain names on my server. And I called up my hosting company one time, and I said, you know, I got this problem, this and this and this. Can you help me fix it? And the guy said, sure. And he came back, and about a minute he said, you've got a lot of paranormal names. Why is that domain names? I said, well, you know, I mean, I own them, and I like paranormal, and I do research in it. This was, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. I hope you don't mind, but I'd like to tell you a story. I said, sure. It was like 2 in the morning. Because I'm going to tell you, from the only time that you can call a web hosting company and get any help is 2 in the morning, okay? Because everybody's always too busy. So he said, you know, people don't know this about me, but and they were there. This web development company was based in Salt Lake City, Utah. And he said, you know, my family owns property adjacent to Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh.
And we can't sell it. I said, really? He said, no, we can't sell it because no one will buy it. They're too terrified. And we ensued about a two-hour discussion about Skinwalker Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman was nice enough the next week. He sent me probably a 2,000-word essay on their experiences at Skinwalker Ranch.
Wow.
And so a couple months later, he was kind enough to give me his phone number. And I called him. I said, you know, we talked about it. You remember me? I'm John Stamey. This. He said, John, we really can't discuss this because whenever I talk about it, bad luck happens.
Yep.
I'll have to call you back later. Now, that Gmail email is gone.
Oh.
It has vanished from my Gmail account. And he sent me an email about 2 years ago and said, I'm so sorry. I wanted to talk to you. I cannot do it. Check in with me later. And he gave me his full name, and I found out that he is a senior elder in the Mormon Church in Salt Lake City. So, I mean, he's not anybody to be messed with. I mean, he's telling the truth. And he said, it is too terrifying. Things happen to me when I discuss this. Could you please expound, and I'm not going to mention his name, but could you please expound on his comment that bad luck happens when you talk about the Skinwalkers?
Oh, absolutely. It's Navajo belief that you don't even mention the name of Yi Naralushi. Just speaking about them will bring their attention to you. So if you're going to speak about these guys at all, you have to do so with the utmost respect and make that respect blindingly known so that everybody that hears it, including them, know that you're respecting their name. If you don't, if you talk about them in any negative light, then according to Navajo tradition, bad luck will follow. And sometimes that bad luck includes the death of a family, death of your livestock, or even the death of yourself if you're not too careful.
Okay, that's kind of a very – you know what I like about when I ask you a question, you give me a fairly succinct answer about, well, this is what you do or what you don't do, and I like that because it shows that you've done a lot of research. He said his family couldn't sell the property. No one would buy it.
I'm not surprised. I'm really not. I mean, word of mouth probably spread that there was something there, that there was some kind of bad karma or bad magic at play. And I'm not really surprised that nobody wanted it. You know, because if you know it has something to do with a Yi Naralushi or a Skinwalker, you don't even want to play with that. That's something that most people are not prepared for.
Well, that's true. It's like there was a piece of property for sale in Clayton, Georgia. And the rumor it was more than a rumor. Many people told me that that was the landing site of a UFO in the 70s. And it was – but they wanted – all of a sudden, the price got jacked up so much I couldn't afford it. I mean, it was insane. But, you know, there's property that's interesting that people do want to buy. And it's like – I mean, people do buy these insane asylums when states decide to get rid of them. They're too expensive to keep up and everything. So, I mean, you know, I would say that there's an interesting valuation on paranormal property. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, I think it's our morbid curiosity. You know, I think even though we know something could be dangerous, we want to experience it for ourselves, especially if we hear stories from the past where so-and-so had this happen or this woman had this go down. We're kind of going, you know, oh, well, maybe if I buy it and I stay there, something will happen to me that I can really start looking into. I mean, I'm kind of like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something
you know
may
I mean?
Happen to you, and you'll
yeah.
– And it'll be like you're in Rhode Island at the house where the Conjuring happened, and it'll,
right.
it'll be terrifying.
So,
you got to be careful about that.
Yeah, but I mean, I think people have that excitement, though. I mean, I think people that really research this, we go into this kind of thinking we don't want something to happen, but in truth, we do. We need something to happen to validate our research and our curiosity. So when places like that come up, we go, oh, it's taboo? Awesome, I'm going there, or I'm going to buy it. You know, it's because we want to experience something.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like I don't know what to say. I think you've hit the nail on the head. People have this rather morbid curiosity that oh well let's go check this out. I mean, oh I don't believe it. They're really acting like high school students. They're saying oh I don't believe this, but you know let's go see it. And they better be really careful because our Monday night
mm-hmm.
co-host. Robin McCray, I mean, she says, you don't want to mess around with this stuff. This stuff is dangerous. I mean, like when
mm-hmm.
you talk about Wendigo, people, you know, I mean, people have had experiences and horrible cannibalistic experiences with things like Wendigos. And
oh, yeah.
in fact, do you have any experiences, any really horrible experiences with ghosts, demons, Wendigos, or these other things that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I mean, personally, I had what I consider a ghost experience. I was telling you this over the phone briefly when we last talked, but I heard the disembodied voices of children laughing when I was out in the middle of the desert. I mean, there was no kids around. There was nobody else around but me. And I heard this crowd of children that sounded like maybe 4 or 5 years old, and they were laughing really loud, like they found something very comical. And I could hear these footsteps coming towards me. I could hear their little feet hitting the rocks and the gravel coming towards me, but there was nothing there. There was no physical representation of them there at all. So I'm standing there, and I'm hearing this, and I'm going, what am I hearing? I'm not seeing anything. So even though it's not super terrifying, it's not a Wendigo, it was still pretty scary to hear kids when you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, absolutely.
On the kids' voices, could you tell if they were it was a Native American or maybe Hispanic or?
I honestly couldn't. With the way they were laughing, they actually sounded pretty merry, like they were happy about something. You know, so like what I could only pull from this was maybe these spirits of kids were for some reason happy that I was there. You know, maybe there was something about my presence where they felt comfort with me being there, or maybe they just liked who I was. I don't know. It's really hard to say, but I couldn't tell if they were Hispanic or Native American or anything from the last. No.
Were they? Did you notice a change in temperature or a different odor in the air or anything?
There was a slight change in the temperature. I mean, it went from being very, very warm that day to a slight cool, but it wasn't one of those bitter colds where you feel like you're going to freeze or anything. It was almost like a pleasant cold. You know, and then there was like a sweet smell in there. It kind of smelled like maybe a some kind of flower.
Mm. That's interesting.
Mm, it was spooky at the time, though. You know, when you're by yourself and that kind of thing happens, you're like, I'm going to get out of here now.
Right, and did you? Did you get out of there pretty quickly?
Yes, I did. When that happened, I was just like, you know what? I don't know what I'm messing with. So I'm going to leave, and I'm going to come back when I'm more prepared. You know, I'm going to come back when I'm in a more calm state of mind and see if it happens again. And very interestingly enough, it happened not just to me, but to a friend and I the following night. We were back at my house, and we were in the back, and I was smoking a cigarette with him. And we heard the kids again, the same identical laughter that I heard before. And he was looking around for these kids. We saw nothing there, you know, because it was probably about, I'd say, 2 in the morning. It was very late at night. So we're looking around going, where are their kids, man? And we heard those rushing footsteps again. You know, so it's happened twice already.
It happened
wow.
twice, so we can say confidently it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, most
definitely. And it's a lot like, And I know you're out there in the Southwest. You're probably familiar with Marfa, Texas, and the Marfa Lights. And what's
yes,
interesting,
very much
the most interesting thing about the Marfa Lights is not that they exist, but that the city of Marfa built a visitor center for people to come watch them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the single most telling thing about the Marfa Lights, and they've had people out there looking around. They're not there, and then they're at the visitor center, and they see them rushing back and forth. So
mm-hmm.
it's like, I've talked to a number of remote viewers and everything, and nobody seems to be able to have. Can I say nobody seems to have a handle on what's going on with the Marfa Lights?
We may never know with that one. I think that one's going to be a mystery forever.
Well, they're kind of kissing cousins to what we have for my home county, which is Burke County, North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
which is the Brown Mountain Lights. And people love the map Brown Mountain Lights, and they kind of like they can see them for a while, several years, then they can't see them. And the Smithsonian
mm-hmm.
Institute sent a group of researchers out there in the early 20s, and they couldn't figure it out. I mean, they had the same experience, just like the Marfa Lights. They would look there, and they would have people down there where everything was supposedly happening. The people down there couldn't see anything. Then they were up on the mountain ridges, and they could see it. So, I mean, it's like we've got a phenomenon that traditional scientists don't seem to want. They don't want to investigate it. And don't you find that kind of interesting?
I do, because I think what it is traditional scientists are afraid to think outside the box. They would have to admit that in order to solve these mysteries, we have to come up with new methods, new processes, and they don't want to take the time.
Well, not
well,
only
that's
that,
true,
too, is they probably also have people watching them. So even if they did somehow come up with something, they're probably scared of someone else watching to see what they uncover.
It could be.
Well, I think that's one part, Kyler. Then the other thing that I believe is that they're too tied to the National Science Foundation grants, and those folks don't want to do anything but count butterflies. And I'm serious, and I have a whole talk I'd be glad to give to you sometime. But the whole fact is traditional scientists don't want to deal with the paranormal because it really is. It's so far outside their boxes. What do you do?
Well, you adapt. That's what you do. You adapt and you learn and you figure out ways to answer things even in smaller ways and just come up with some kind of belief or theories or ideas. We need something.
Go ahead, John.
No, please go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say the thing of it is that with the science, you can prove all this stuff scientifically.
Mm-hmm.
You can absolutely prove it scientifically, but nobody wants to talk about like the stuff they do at the Monroe Institute up in New York or any of these other places where they talk about this stuff. It's like they don't want to touch it. They're like, nope, that's why they try and, you know, the different stuff with portals and stuff, you know, you can talk scientifically how it can happen and what needs
mm-hmm.
to happen for it to happen and proven scientifically, same way with, you know, telepathy speaking, all this stuff, but yet they refuse to talk about it. But yet it is proven scientifically. There is studies that prove that this stuff is real. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't want to touch it. Like Dr. John said, the grants, the money funding, they got to stick to probably a certain program.
Well,
that's
exactly right. Counting butterflies. I don't know what you can say. But it's interesting that traditional science won't go there, but yet I'm gonna say something really bad here that's going to make a lot of people
Uh-oh.
Mad. But traditional pharmacology, big pharma, they'll go anywhere they want to make a buck. And they're considered wonderful. So, you know, I've always wondered about that. So I guess I'll be quiet now and we'll move forward. All right, Matt, next question for you.
Okay. I'm kind of curious. I kind of got the skinwalker and a shapeshifter.
Mm-hmm.
are they one and the same, or do you have different beings that do the different things?
I think they're different. I think that there's some kind of energies that the Navajo shaman tapped into that gave them the ability to take on the shape of the animal they desire to be. Because with the skinwalker tradition, what happens is they have to wear the pelt of the animal they want to be, say like coyote or wolf or even like a bird, a vulture or a crow, but they have to wear the pelt of this thing. If they don't have the pelt, they can't turn into the animal. Whereas the shapeshifters that you more commonly hear about, they just turn into whatever and they don't have to wear that pelt in any way. So I think they're two different entities.
That makes sense. I think I had a skinwalker encounter. And I talked about it on here. I was telling John, remember me telling you about the voicemail that I received?
Absolutely. And that was terrifying. In fact, Matt, if you don't mind, would you go ahead and retell that story here and let Ryan and Kyler and I hear about that? Because you told me it was a great story. So if you don't mind, telling us.
It was September 13th, 2019. It was on a Friday the 13th, a full moon. And I can't remember if it was the wolf moon or what, probably the hunter's moon, something, you know, on September 13th, it was, or the full moon then in the fall. And I was coming back from Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And at the time, I was dating this girl, and I was on the phone to her. And as I started to go up into Virginia, and Cumberland Gap National Park there, this mangy-looking mutt, it kind of resembled like a wolf or a mangy-looking large coyote, maybe a red wolf, I don't know. But, I mean, it was pretty rough-looking. Well, I'm on the phone to her, and I'm like, what the F? And I slam on my brakes because I about hit this thing. She's like, what is it? I'm like, there's some mangy mutt, and it's just staring at me now. And it's giving me this dirty look. Like, watch it, buddy. Watch it.
Ooh.
And as soon as it jumps into the woods, it paused there for a second and gave me that look. And then it jumped into, as soon as it got into the woods, now I get this phone call. And of course, I'm on the telephone. And I'm like, that's weird. I'm getting a phone call now. And it's like 11:30 at night. And it comes up. Normally, if somebody's blocks their number, it'll say restricted. I never get. And then if it's another number, if I don't have them in contact with, it'll show the phone number, the caller ID. But it never shows unknown.
Whoa.
And this comes up unknown. I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. So I'm driving on down the road, and then I look down, and I'm still talking to her. I'm like, I said, well, they left a voicemail. Hold on. So I listen to this voicemail, and at first it sounds Native American. I don't know if it is I've still got it. We play it on computers, stuff like that. I just got to figure out how to play it, get it off of I've still, you know, I saved it on my voicemail. But it's kind of like, I don't know if they're saying woo-ha or if they're – it's first I thought it was, well, maybe they're sneezing. But once we got it on a computer and started playing it forward and backwards and the recording, it was really, really spooky. But, I mean, it sounds Native American, and to this day, I firmly believe whatever that was I about hit was what called me. That energy is what called me that night, right immediately afterwards, telling me to watch it or warning me or something. Because if you go up through there, there's nothing but Indian burial mounds all the way up and down that mountain there. And they date back to the 1400s. So,
wow.
Yeah, I've got that voicemail, and it's kind of spooky. I'm pretty sure, though, it had to have something to do with that wolf or coyote, whatever that thing was.
Well, let me ask you, did you try to slow that down and play it backwards?
I had Angelia, she recorded on a recording device that she had, and then she put it on her computer, and she was playing it backwards and forwards, and it was real. She said, turn it off. The hair on her arm started standing up. But it's just like one big yell, like Native Americans, like, woo-ha, or something, or I don't know,
so
the same, brouhaha. Or
more like a war cry, possibly?
It could have been. I just have to let people listen to it. I need to record it on something else because I can only play it on my phone. And what's weird, too, is on my phone, I have to, if I play once, I can normally, if you play the voicemail, you can keep hitting play. And if you open up that one voicemail, you can continuously play it. Well, on that one, I can only play it once and I have to back out of my voicemail, go back into my voicemail to get it to play again, which is weird, too.
Yeah, well, that is really peculiar. I got some questions about that. I really do. You didn't upset anybody that was of indigenous heritage, did you?
Not that I know of. It's our talent, though. I've probably made a lot of people mad.
Well, traditionally, with a skinwalker, with a Yinatalushi in particular, they always have a purpose. Either A, you've upset them personally, or B, somebody sent them to you for something you've done to them. Now, it could be something inadvertent, like you maybe accidentally broke something that was in these burial mounds, or you said something that was kind of a slight towards the spirit there, and the energy got upset. You know, I mean, there's so many different avenues to take on this one.
Oh, no, I got enough X's. It could be somebody sent something after me.
It could be. It could very well be. I mean, did you date anybody of Native heritage?
Maybe. Gosh, I'd have to sit and think. You don't want to see my X list. I'm sure there's somebody in there that has. But yeah, it's. But what's weird
is there's a positive side. There's a positive side though. Maybe it wasn't there for you, because typically with a skinwalker, when it's been sent after somebody, it does not stop until it gets what it wants. So the fact that
I had another report. I had a report from a person here not too long ago said that they described the same thing that I had seen, and they're in Cumberland Gap right there, the same area, and they've seen it twice now.
Wow.
So,
and is there any weird occurrences going on around them, like the death of livestock, the death of pets? Anything along
those lines? But they claim that their pets get, you know, really spooked, and their dogs, and like if they're walking their little dog or whatever. But they said that they told me that it was standing in the middle of the road and it wouldn't move. And they had to cut up close to it and budget, and they said it was big, which this thing was pretty good size. But I just remember the look that it was giving me. And I didn't even describe what I had encountered there. They was asking me about it. And
so you remember the look of this thing really well.
Huh?
You remember how it looked extremely well. Like, you can remember the appearance of this thing in detail?
Yeah, it was sickly looking. Its hair was dark hair, but it had like I'm colorblind, certain colors, certain things. But it looked like a light brown patches on it, kind of like it was mangy, or, you know, discoloration in certain parts of its hair where it's all mangy and stuff. And, I mean, it was real super skinny.
What about its eyes? Were its eyes just a typical animal's eyes, or was there something off about them that you couldn't quite pinpoint?
Oh, no, I was looking at – I didn't really look at the eyes at the time. I was looking more at the – It kind of gave me that, because its eyes were like a, its mouth kind of like it was like a, I don't know, like it was grinning or something, like, hey, you know, like it was upset about hitting. But its eyes were just like a canine dog, I believe, because I didn't notice anything special about them.
All right, because usually with the Yinatalushi, the best way to tell them apart, even in their animal form, is the eyes maintain a very, very human-like appearance. So whenever somebody runs into something that they suspect is a skinwalker, I always tell them, look at the eyes, but don't look into the eyes. Because if you look into the eyes, there's a way the skinwalker can actually get inside your head and start really messing with you that way.
Well, I did notice, though, it didn't have reflective eye shine. Normally you would see the reflective eye shine of something that was out in the road, but it did not have a reflective eye shine.
All right, you'd notice reflection of eye shine from an animal, not from a human. So
right,
it had,
we do not have that.
Right, so it had human qualities to the eyes, though.
Yep. I didn't think about that until you just said something.
Well, what you can do is I'm going to recommend you talk to somebody, my friend, William Nighthawk. That guy is like a brother to me, and he's a mentor. He knows a lot about this stuff, And he can put a blessing your way to get rid of that so it never comes around again.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I don't know. It's not that I don't want to. I'd like to learn about it. I mean, I'd actually, if it was something, I'd like to communicate and try and learn.
That's the problem, though. The problem with the skinwalker, though, you're not going to be able to communicate with it, okay? Like, if it's latched on to you, it doesn't want to talk. It's not there to reason. It's there for some big purpose that you don't know of yet.
Makes sense.
With skinwalkers, it's never a pleasant thing. It's never, ever, ever a pleasant thing. If it's a Yinarunushi, it's there for a sinister motive. And it's something that does have to be taken care of pretty quickly. It's not something you want to toy around with.
Right.
So it's just a suggestion. If you want to go with it, let me know. You know where to find me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Well, no wonder everybody's so terrified.
That's very interesting. And I'll say this, Ryan. You've got kind of a network of people that can help folks that have problems with these entities, correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you have to. When you go into this kind of research, especially the skinwalkers, you have to go in prepared. You don't want to toy around with it. It's not like a Bigfoot. When you're going that you have that chance of communicating with it, you have a chance of habituating it or getting a pleasant encounter. When you're going into skinwalker research, you basically got to go in like you're a soldier. You got to be ready. You have to have different venues of escape, different means of warding this thing off if it latches on. It's a very dangerous thing to research.
It really is. And our friend Spencer Fisher, who's been on here a couple of times on Monday and Tuesday night, he has been out there at Skinwalker Ranch, and he said, John, it is absolutely terrifying. And law enforcement will encourage you to stay away.
Yep.
And I think that is very telling, you know, when you have the law enforcement trying to say, you know, you don't need to do this. And,
yeah, that's
and everything. So when you were out, I want to make sure I get this right. You were out there in the Utah Flats area, correct?
The Arizona Flats, yeah.
Oh, the Arizona Flats. Okay, I'm sorry. And in general, describe your experiences with the skinwalkers just at kind of a high level that we could, you know, kind of put our finger on.
It's one of those things that when you walk into it, you know, you really kind of believe that there's not going to be any big findings and you're not going to experience anything. But as I started talking to the people and, like, speaking to the Navajos at the reservations and what have you, you know, I kind of felt like I was walking into a horror story. I felt like maybe I was dropped into a Stephen King novel because they're showing me these areas where skinwalkers used to exist and even areas where they might still be. And you get this horrible feeling every time you go. You're kind of like, oh, God, I'm going to see one and I'm not going to go home today because it's going to get me. But it's also very educational, you know, because they show you the drawings that they have and they tell you personal stories. And so when you don't believe at first, you start believing because of these people. And even though it's terrifying, it's also exhilarating, though, because your mind is opening up to a world that you didn't really know existed before. You know, so I'm learning more and more. Each time I go and I talk to somebody new, it's a very big experience for me because they don't just talk about it freely, okay? Native Americans are, like, very tight-lipped when it comes to this kind of stuff. So when they come to me and say they want to tell me their story, it's an honor for me. It's a very big honor because they're opening up and sharing their tradition with me, but they're also sharing this horror with me. So, you know, it's broadened my world immensely.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful. And when you're talking about in Arizona, are you talking about anywhere near Sedona?
Yes. Not too far away. It's not too far away. It's maybe an hour and a half drive from where I am.
So do you think that kind of the legend of Sedona and what and all the things that we have heard about it, do you think that is part of the experience out there?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I mean, you come out here, you have to go to Sedona, and you have to go to the Mogollon Rim as well because we have the Mogollon Monster, Arizona's Bigfoot. So you do have to go out and you have to experience what it's like to be in those areas and just get that vibe and absorb that vibe.
Okay, that's really interesting. Now, there's a story. I'm going to switch cryptids on you. because I've got a book coming out called Lizard Man Companion. And there were a couple of guys that were jogging out into the desert outside of Phoenix. And they got to like the far point of the trail, and they looked, and all of a sudden there was what they called a lizard man. And they turned around and got the hell out of there. It's a fairly well-known story, and I was wondering if you had any commentary about that.
Yeah, actually, you know, the lizard man is a very big belief in basically all parts of Arizona, but what the reoccurring belief is, as far as that goes, is that they're extraterrestrial, that they're aliens that are hiding in the washways and the riverbeds and the sewer tunnels in Arizona. You know, I've not come across any evidence of lizard men yet. I'm kind of hoping to. I just don't want to see one up close and personal, but it's an interesting topic to really get into because people are commonly afraid of lizard men in Arizona.
Well, it's really interesting that you say that because lizard man has got kind of a big following down here in South Carolina. In fact, I run the South Carolina Lizard Man Festival. And the whole point is there were a number of sightings in and around Bishopville, South Carolina, which is in and around Scape or Swamp. And
my co-host and I did a video on that thing. The lizard man of Scape or Swamp, I'm a big fan of that.
Well, then we definitely need to talk because my book's getting ready to go up on Amazon. And if you have maybe a story or two that we could add to it, I'd love to do that.
Okay, that'd be great.
Absolutely. You got me excited now because the whole it's interesting. The town of Bishopville wants to squash the entire legend of the lizard man, and they want to have something called the Lizard Man Stomp, which is kind of a fun take on the lizard man. But the lizard man is a very serious matter. And in fact, my book, Lizard Man Companion, it has 14 stories from the local newspaper, which is very important. That's, again, as Dr. Sally Feather would say, that's a very historical resource. And I mean, this lizard man thing is, it's not anything to be laughed at.
No, and, I mean, I find it to be compelling.
Pardon me?
I find it to be a very compelling story. It's something that I want to look into personally. Once I can get funds together, I want to actually get out there and I want to do personal investigation.
You know
well,
what's interesting?
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what, after a number of years of doing it, nobody in Bishopville will talk to you. Nobody. And they did their best to destroy the Lizard Man Festival, but I didn't let them. They cheated me out of thousands of dollars of money. And they did it with a lot of me in their life. I mean, that they were excited that they screwed me over.
Well,
and you'll
let me
see
ask
it
you,
in,
why did they want to squash that, though? I mean, it's almost guaranteed tourism. Why would you want to squash a local legend? I don't understand.
Well, they said that they were embarrassed about it. Because what I did was I took my take on Lizard Man from Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and the Mothman. And the Mothman has brought Point Pleasant back into existence. The town was about to go under. And and so it was wonderful that this high school vocational education teacher put together the Mothman Festival, which I was told by the Chamber of Commerce is the most important economic driver between Charleston, West Virginia, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I mean, that's a huge statement. They have around 75,000 people that come there.
Wow.
So, I mean, in Bishopville, it turns out, they were spooked, scared, and didn't want to do it. And but I went ahead and wrote the Lizard Man Companion. I think it's a very compelling book, and we'll talk about it after all this. And I'm telling you, they don't like it. So
that's too bad. That's almost tragic.
You know,
well,
John, whenever I've been out there a couple times, and one thing I noticed
there
was
one of the conferences.
Yeah. I've been there, well, a couple times now. And first time, we were able to go out to Skateboard Swamp. You could go out there and run around. This last time, they have it all marked off, no trespassing signs all over it now.
That's a bummer.
So they don't want nobody in there.
That is correct. And, you know, Ryan, what they're doing is they're trying to rewrite history.
Yeah, I mean, is it they don't want people in there because there's really something there? Or is it just, you know, they don't care?
I think it's because there's something there, honestly.
That's what I was going to say. That's what it sounds like to me.
You know how he was talking about a lot of people won't talk to you about it. I had went to, every time I'm there, I go out to the outskirts of Bishopville there, a little bar called Mary's Bar. And that's where you get, because all the locals are in there and they start drinking, and you can get some of them to open up. But a lot of them, the people were talking to me about in there were more Bigfoot-like type things.
Okay.
They weren't quite so much reptilian, but they were talking about a lot of Bigfoot stuff.
I'm so happy you mentioned that because that kind of brings up a question. I was actually told that the lizard man is nothing more than a moss or algae-covered Bigfoot. What's your guys' take on that?
Absolutely
not.
Two
totally different. Yeah, I think they're two totally different.
I would agree with that. I kind of sit on the fence going, I think it's more reptilian than Bigfoot, but okay.
Now, if you go back in history, there used to be these, they called them the fish people or whatever, and they were like lizard-type people. The natives, whenever they would eat fish, and they're just like they are lizard man type people. They supposedly had died out because of, I don't know, it's hard telling why they said that they died out, but there is some folklore behind these lizard type people that was in South Carolina close to the coast. I got some info on it.
Very cool. You'll have to send that my way after the show.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll definitely talk because it's great that you have a different take on the lizard man than a lot of people do. It's more like the one that I have, and I'm glad that Matt has the same thing. So we're definitely gonna talk.
Good.
So,
I look forward to that.
So look, thanks about that. So I tell you what, Ryan, are there any other? Do you have another story or two that you would like to share with us?
Well, I mean, there is my Dogman encounter that I had about 2 years ago, and that was really what set me on the course for Dogman research.
Well, please tell us.
Okay, well, about 2 years ago, a friend of mine that lived in town, he and his wife were going out on vacation, and so he had asked me to house sit for him. So, you know, I had agreed, and I would do checkups during different times of the day. I would go in the morning, I would go in the afternoon, and my last checkup would be about midnight at night, just to make sure there was no trespassers in his backyard. Well, on this particular night, you know, it was about midnight, I was going there, I was walking into his backyard, and where he lives, there's bushes, there's Palo Verde trees and all this stuff in the back, and then there's a wash or riverbed not too far away. And as I'm walking up, I noticed that the coyotes sounded off tonight. They sounded very nervous, like there was something there that shouldn't be. But I kind of dismissed it. I thought maybe there was somebody out with their dog, and the dog was bigger than them, so these coyotes were panicking. You know, so it really didn't register. But as I'm getting closer to the back, it's completely black in his backyard for the moment. I hear what sounds like a growl, a low growl. So at first, I think maybe it's a homeless person or vagrant. So being the tough guy that I am, I decide to shout out, "Hey!" And there's nothing at first. There's no return response. So I just keep going back, and then the growl happens again finally, but it's deeper and a little bit louder this go-round. So I stop again. I'm like, "Hey," trying to sound really tough and scare off whoever it is. Well, that's when I look into his backyard, and I can barely see something in the shadows moving. And the form was taller than me. It's probably about 6.5 feet tall. I'm only 5'10", so I'm like, "Oh, man, this guy's taller than me. There's going to be problems." So I'm walking in the back, and the lights, the security lights, flicker on, and just as they do that, the lights bounce off of this thing's eyes. I can see the amber glow, and I stop. That's when I stop dead in my tracks, and I'm looking at what appears to be a hyena, okay? And having lived in Arizona for over 20 years, I know there's no hyenas in Arizona. There's no zoos nearby. Nobody owns a hyena that got loose. So I'm just standing there going, why is there a hyena in my friend's yard? And this thing sees me. It's looking right at me, and I'm looking at it. It's looking me in the eyes. And so I kind of divert my eyes a little bit to get my eyes off of its gaze, but I can still see it in my line of sight. And I can see it tilting its head. Its ears are going up, and, you know, it's playing like a curious canine. So we don't move for a few minutes. And suddenly this thing charges forward about 3 feet and suddenly stops. You know, and I can feel my knees buckle. You know, I'm like, oh, my God, this thing's trying to kill me. But it's just staring at me. It's standing there staring at me, and I'm looking at it. And it reaches up, and as it reaches up, it stands bipedally. It grabs a branch, and I hear that loud pop that so many people say they hear when they hear have a dogman encounter. And, you know, we're just looking at each other. Nobody's making a move. And finally, it just slowly starts to back away. And as it's backing away, I'm starting to, like, feel my heart beat out of my chest. I'm like, oh, God, where's it going? And it just kept backing up and backing up. And once it was a safe distance away, man, that's it. I grew rockets in my feet, and I ran to my friend's house. I'm locking the doors. I'm bolting his windows. I'm looking for his knives. You know, so keep in mind, it's my friend's house, so I don't know where he keeps his weapons at. So I'm grabbing butter knives, steak knives, and I call him up on the phone, and I tell him, hey, man, there's a hyena in your backyard. And he thinks I'm crazy at first. You know, he's like, Ryan, there's no hyenas in Arizona. And I'm telling him, no, man, I saw a hyena in your backyard. It was big. It was taller than me, and it stood on two legs, but there was a hyena in your backyard. And so he came home. And when we went out to look where this thing was standing, we sure enough, we did see claw prints where it had scuffed the ground. So, yeah, I got to see a type 2 hyena variant dogman.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And terrifying.
It is, but you know what? That is something that really it sparked my interest in the dogman, because I did not believe in dogman or werewolves when I first started this. I know that sounds crazy because I believe in Bigfoot, Chupacabra, Loch Ness Monster, but for some reason, werewolves just didn't seem like they belonged. You know, I was like, eh, werewolves can't exist. But then I saw, you know, the hyena type, and I'm like, oh, dogmen are real. Okay, cool. All right, awesome. So I started researching those, and I've found some interesting stuff in the same area, because I go to a research area that's not too far from where I had my sighting. I found some very, very curious stuff that I probably should have sent pictures for you guys to examine. But at one point, I actually found a place in the desert where somebody had built this mound, a staircase out of dirt and mud. And in the middle of this big mound, they have a fruit plate they always leave out there. And it's always fresh fruit. Like, they're always changing it whenever I go out there. It's got this big smorgasbord of stuff to eat. And so I left a note, okay? I left a note for whoever it was, and I said, you know, on the note, whoever it is, what are you feeding? And a couple months later, when I went back, there was a note waiting for me. But the note didn't say much. It had a picture, a drawing on it, okay? And this drawing was of a bipedal hyena type. And they wrote, we're feeding these. So
oh, wow.
That way, they made me go, whoa.
Jesus,
so there is something out
Christ.
There. Mm-hmm. So there's something out there. Other people have seen it. You know, so I'm going to keep looking at them and see if I can find them.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I never
it
heard
really
anybody
is.
Gifting or feeding a dogman. Of course, you hear about Bigfoot, but not the dogman.
You know, it's not the first I've heard of it, though. I mean, you would think that people wouldn't feed dogman, but I've spoken to different people on Facebook and even Instagram where they say they habituate them the same way you would a Bigfoot. I don't think that's a good idea, and I don't think it's a good idea to feed any wild animal, but, you know, if they're doing it when I'm not around, that's kind of on them, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, tell you what, gentlemen, these have been amazing stories, and I think we're about to come to our closing off time, and what I'd like to do is let everyone talk about their plugs and what they've got going on. So, Matt, we'll do you, and then we'll do Kyler, and then we'll do Ryan. So, Matt, what have you got going on these days?
Of course, you know, research is always. I'm going to take next couple weeks off from going out and doing, I say that, but that don't mean I will, but try and gather up some more info and stuff. But I got a trip with Trey and them. We're going to do another expedition at the Meadow Project here coming up soon. Get ready for that and, of course, you know, investigate some other cases. But just for the moment, with it being so cold and work being busy the next couple of weeks, I won't be doing a whole lot of traveling or research. But at first of February, though, is when I'll start out again.
All right, I'm going to say we'll forgive you, but you better get busy first of February, okay?
Okay.
It's another terrible dad joke. Kyler, what have you got going on?
Well, it has absolutely nothing to do with all the awesome stories we've been talking about, but we're working on a bunch of education, trying to go into changing the current system we have now, because we have all known for a very long time that it has not worked for us at all, and it's just pretty much turned into a daycare system for everyone. So we're having an event up in June to just have a bunch of entrepreneurs out and connect with everybody to see what we can do to change what's going on with education.
Well, that sounds great, and just please let us know how it goes. And I guess what I'll say is that in February 18th, we've got the Jacksonville, North Carolina Comic-Con. March the 3rd, we have the Frogman Festival up in Cincinnati, Ohio. And April 1st, we have the Georgia Bigfoot Conference in Dillard, Georgia, just north of Clayton. And now it's interesting about the Frogman Festival. Ryan, you and I have a little connection there, don't we?
Yes, we do. We do indeed.
Please explain that to everyone.
Well, my co-host over on Monster Radio, Ashley Hilt, who's also another researcher, Matt, you know her, she is going to be attending that Frogman Festival. And, yeah, so
sir, she is not attending the Frogman Festival. She is, I believe, the host of these talks at the Frogman Festival.
Yep, she is indeed. And she's actually met you before. So, yeah, we have that little connection there.
Oh, cool.
Now, I'm sorry. Where did she meet me?
Oh, at a convention previously. I mean, I'm sure she's in the chat, so she might have to tell you exactly where. But
I think that's great. You know what? This whole paranormal world, it's small enough that we can get our arms around it, but it's big enough to be important. And that's wonderful. And that's why I already told my partner in the Loveland Frogman Festival, Jeff Craig, that I had already invited you next year to be a keynote speaker. And he said, John, that's great that you know him. We want him there. I said, wonderful. So we're going to have a great time. And do you think you're going to be able to make it to the Loveland Frogman Festival in Cincinnati?
I don't think this year, no, because I'm going to be very, very busy. It turns out that writing a book is a lot bigger of a task than I thought it would. And I really got to get my
name in the crowd. Join the crowd.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize it would be this hard. I thought I could just sit down and write a chapter or two once every week or whatever. But I'm like, you know what? I'm being lazy. I really need to get this done, especially if I want it out by the end of this year. So I really need to put my nose to the grindstone and work on my Skinwalker and Wendigo book so I can get it put out there finally and shut up about it. You know, I just keep procrastinating, and I hate myself for that. But I guess that's what comes when you're really busy. And, of course, I have more Dogman investigations that I'm going to do because I love getting out there into the nature and just doing my own thing. And I'll be going on Skinwalker research and, you know, meeting with more people that had alleged encounters with them and just, you know, trying to stay busy, you know, trying to live the life.
That's exactly right. And I wanted to say congratulations to you for saying that, because we, Matt Delf, Kyler Smith, myself, and you are living the lives of paranormal researchers, and we're having the best times of our lives. Sorry for the double entendre there, but we are having the best times, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. We're learning something new.
Well, I don't know what a normal life is like.
Well, someday I want to meet up with Matt. I want to know about these vampires.
Come on, Matt. There's no such thing as a – it's great. And so anyway, Ryan, I want to say thank you very much.
I missed that.
for being on our show. It's been absolutely wonderful. Matt Dell,
it's my pleasure.
Thank you for bringing Ryan to us. And what have you got to say now? I'm sorry I've been talking all over you, but I was just trying to make sure everyone knows how much we appreciate both of you guys bringing to this show.
Hey, my pleasure. But, Matt, we have to meet up someday. We have to talk about these vampires, man.
Yeah, definitely. Most definitely.
I definitely want to hear
you. I may be out in Arizona here shortly, so.
Hey, if you're out in Arizona, you better give me a call. I'll be very angry.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I definitely will.
Awesome.
But, yeah, we'll talk after.
All I got to say is thanks to everybody for being on the show. It's been a wonderful show. And I don't really do this all the time, but Ryan, you going to come back to our show?
Oh, definitely. You invite me on and I'll be there with bells on.
All right. Well, we'll keep talking. And what I normally do is I do what I call the call around, where I call everyone that was on the show and say, thanks a lot. And I get your input for our next trip down memory lane of the paranormal. So look, thanks a lot. We really appreciate you being here. Matt Delf, thanks for bringing Ryan here. Kyler Smith, thanks for being here. And we'll talk to everybody next week. Same bat time, same bat channel on another exciting edition of Scarycast Tuesday. Take care, everybody. And everybody needs to say goodbye to everyone.
Bye, guys.
Good night, everyone.
Everybody can say whatever they want. Well, that's all right. We'll do it next time. Take care, and we'll see you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.